Welcome to Connecting the Community podcast. I am your host, Marge Andre. I will be connecting you to people, organizations, and events that create community. I am creating this podcast in Richmond Hill, an eclectic and very culturally diverse community with lots of trees and streams and interesting people, just up the hill from Toronto. On this podcast, I have the pleasure of talking with MP for Aurora Oak Ridge's Richmond Hill riding, Leah Taylor Roy. We could talk about many things, and there's a good chance we will have subsequent podcasts. But for this podcast, we are going to focus on women getting involved in politics. Welcome, Leah.
Thank you, Marge, and it's a pleasure to be here. It's such an important issue.
Yeah, no, I'm very glad we found the time to do this. So, but let's start, Leah, and please tell us a little about yourself, including how you have been active politically. I know you come from a politically active family.
Yes, I do. And I've been politically active. Actually, the first time I suppose I was active was around age 6 years old when I was on my on a Matchbox cover. If you remember, people used to do those for elections. It was my father's election and he had the family on it. So that was quite a while ago.
Okay.
But on my own, I was involved in student politics. I was involved in the Young Liberals in several campaigns for other people, leadership campaigns, campaigns municipally, provincially, federally. And then my life took me in a different direction. And I kind of stepped back for politics for a number of years when I was involved in business. But my father was mayor, and my brother is mayor currently in Newmarket. So yes, mm-hmm. I do come from a political family, and it definitely contributed to my decision later in life to enter politics.
Right. Politics certainly wasn't foreign to you. I'm sure many dinner conversations revolved around politics. Now, you have been involved also with women in politics and in various capacities. Can mm-hmm. you talk about that?
Sure. Well, the National Women's Liberal Commission is very important in every party. It's not just the Liberals, but there are different kinds of groups for promoting women in politics. Equal Voice is another one that's very important in trying to promote women to run in office. And currently, I am the chairperson of the Liberal Women's Caucus in Ottawa. So I work a lot. We work within caucus, supporting each other and also just ensuring that we have a strong voice.
Okay, very good. I need to know more about that group that you're talking about because I think it's very important.
Mm.
Now, it is recognized that women are underrepresented in all levels of decision-making worldwide. Yeah, how do you express the real consequences of there being women in power in politics?
It's a good question because I think it changes the conversation. And let's be clear, we need men and women. We need representation, not just from different genders, all different genders, but also from different communities and equity deserving groups. To have real democracy, I believe that true representation that is representative of your country, of the population, is necessary because everyone has a different lived experience. And my lived experience as a woman, Marge, will probably be different than yours or someone who immigrated recently or someone who comes from a different background or a Black woman, for example. So there are so many different lived experiences. So it's just not about women. It's about representation. But women, when you look historically, we have been underrepresented. And currently, the Canadian Parliament, I think we're just over 30% women, which is the highest we've ever been. It is kind of the cutoff, according to international associations like the UN, that says at that point you have real representation by women. But my feeling is we need to have 50%+. Women are about 51.5% of the population. We should have 50% women in Parliament. And I think the conversations that come up are different. I think the way we approach things are slightly different. And it's not to say that there aren't women who, it's a continuum. I like to think of when I was in school and I took economics and statistics and we would have a normal distribution. And there's always going to be people from every gender that think or act in a certain way. But when you look at the norm, when you look at how do most of the people of that gender interact or what do they mostly bring, there is a difference between that average when you look at men and women. And I think that that is very important in terms of, as I said, both the conversations that come up, the perspectives, and not just on women's issues, Marge. This is about any issue. Perspectives women will bring are different. And that was really clearly evidenced during COVID-19. And there were interesting studies done about women in leadership versus men and the outcomes of the pandemic and what things were prioritized. So we need a fulsome discussion. We need to have people representing every group at the table. But I think particularly when you're talking about gender, it's important to have the different genders represented as well.
Right. Can you articulate what the traits are for women? You know, we're generalizing and we were thinking about this bell curve, but how do you articulate the differences for women?
I think in general, and again, I'm generalizing and it's probably sexist, but if you're asking me in general to look at the bell curve and say it the norm, I would say women tend to be more collaborative. They tend to work together in groups. It's not to say they don't have differences, but there's a different way of working together. I think, quite frankly, to a large extent, and again, there are exceptions, but women's egos are not quite as strong as men's in some senses. And so it's more about getting something done, not about getting credit for it. And I think that what you see as a result is a willingness to work with anybody who's going to help you advance the goals you have. And then when you look at the goals, I also think because today, and I, in a way, I wish it weren't so, but women provide most of the care for families, for elders, for children, and we're always multitasking. It's when you look, and I think there's been a lot of science, cognitive science done around the brains and how we operate, women are just better at multitasking. And quite frankly, politics is a profession where you need to multitask constantly. So I think that ability. And then there's, as I said, that the fact that women play this kind of caring role. I think that women do tend to put people first, children first, families first, and not to the exclusion of other considerations. But when you're looking at an issue, that is probably first and foremost, the kind of compassionate, caring side of things. It's not to say that men don't do it, but I don't think it's always top of mind. And so I think you'll see a different kind of priority placed on things or approach to different things that will emphasize the health, the safety, the well-being of people.
Yeah.
And just a different kind of approach.
Yeah. Thank you for expressing that, for articulating that. I like to think that women are a bit more nurturing. That's a lens that they bring. So nurturing, compassionate are words that I would use. But thank you for saying, giving your opinion, because you certainly have seen a lot. So is it the case that women in cabinet, you know, they so often have been given the roles that are less powerful positions, gender equity, family status. Are you hopeful that things will change?
I think they have already, Marge, under this government. I have to say, I was very impressed when Prime Minister Trudeau took office in 2015 and committed to a gender balanced cabinet. And look, I remember coming after coming to Parliament, going to speak with then Minister of Finance Bill Morneau in his office. And I walked in, and in the reception area, there is a framed photograph of every Minister of Finance from the beginning, 1867. There was not one woman on the wall, Marge. Not only that, there was not one person of color or any diverse group at all. It was quite astounding to see that. And I thought, oh my goodness, we need to have, and really at the time I wasn't interested in being a cabinet minister at all. I was just kind of, you know, I'd like to be a member. I'd like to represent people I know, but I thought, oh, please, we need a woman finance minister because I don't want to have to do it. I don't want to have to be the one. So I was thrilled when Chrystia Freeland became Minister of Finance. and she's deputy prime minister. And look, we had up until recently, Anita Anand was minister of defense. You know, we have Mélanie Joly as minister of foreign affairs, of global affairs. Those are important portfolios. You know, federal development right now is in the hands of Philomena Tassi. Diane Lebouthier is fisheries and oceans, another very important portfolio. So we don't just have women in, you know, what would be typically described as women's portfolios. Although I must say, I consider those to be very important portfolios too. You know, our Minister of Women and, you know, and Youth is, I think, in gender equality plays a very important role, as does our Minister for Families and Communities, which is Jenna Suds. So both Marcy Ian and Minister Ian and Minister Suds. So we have a really strong and powerful group of women in cabinet, but also in our caucus. You know, we have over, we have right now, the Liberals have over 36%, I think around 37, 38% women in our caucus. The Conservatives only have about 16 or 17%. It makes a huge difference in the conversation, just in the feel of the caucus. And I'm really proud of our government for that.
Very interesting. Yes. You have a group of women together with no men, or you have a group and there's not any women. It's a different conversation when you have mixed mixed males and females. So that's good to hear. So what advice do you have for someone, particularly women, who believe they may want to be an elected official? Are there certain skills you'd recommend, maybe developing, or certain type of career education that they may want to pursue?
First, if someone is considering, and I'd say, just do it, please. We need so many more women, and we need women from every background, Marge. Now, I was talking to a woman recently who was interested, an optometrist, and has run associations and done all sorts of things. And she was asking me, and I said, no, you know, that background is great. Like, when you think again of representation, we have, you know, representatives now. It used to be they were all either lawyers or business people. And we still have lawyers and business people in Parliament, and it's appropriate. But we also have doctors, you know, we have nurses, we have small business people, we have, and in fact, our Minister of Small Business is a woman, Richie Valdez, and she was formerly a small business owner. So we have people who have actually lived those lives. We have people, you know, from the armed forces, from other levels of government. It makes it a much more fulsome, just like when I was talking about representation between women, men, you know, gender diverse groups, and all the different kind of communities within our population. Likewise, when you're looking at backgrounds. But in terms of skills, I do think the, you know, ability to read and absorb information quickly, to be able to change topics, to be able to multitask, to be comfortable speaking in public, and having your picture taken. I didn't realize when I ran that one of the the things I do most was have my picture taken, Marge. I'm not sure I would have signed up, but anyway, it was a bit of a shock. But I think mostly, and for me, the most important thing is really a desire to represent people and to serve your community.
Okay.
It really has to be rooted in that. And it doesn't have to be in a grandiose kind of foreign policy way or this or that. We all serve in different ways and our communities are different. But it has to be, if you're not really motivated by a desire to serve and by values and something that you really want to see happen, it's tough. It's a tough, being a representative, elected representative is not for the faint of heart. And so it keeps you going when you feel like, no, this is super important. There are things to be done. I've got, you know your why, know why you're doing it, and it'll help keep you going.
Okay. Yeah. I'm thinking maybe you need to be thick skinned, and because politicians naturally get criticized. So yeah, that's one thing I worry about.
Yeah, definitely helps. And I don't think I was thick-skinned enough, Marge. I think I'm getting more of an elephant or crocodile skin now than I had, because the kind of criticism and bullying to an extent that you're exposed to is difficult. And I don't think I was anticipating that, quite frankly. Not to the extent it is. And I think part of it is the way politics has changed. Mm-hmm. It's become much more, and I think it's also social media.
Yeah.
Anonymity, people can hide behind it, you know, and so people say very nasty, mean things. And I feel like saying, you don't even know me. How can you say something personally about me when you don't even know me, or you make assumptions about me, why I'm doing this, what I'm thinking? It's really, and I think at some point, that's why the why is so important. That's why the purpose is so important in saying, no, it's worth doing this. I can block that. I do wish people who think I'm doing something right or our government is doing something right would write in once in a while, because you always hear from the people who think you're not. It's always the bad stuff, I think.
I am glad you said that. I'm going to put that in the podcast notes. I'm going to
Thank
put
you.
your email and please say positive things once in a while. We
When you
all
think them, when you're feeling them, I'm not asking for,
no.
compliments that aren't deserved.
Yeah. Okay. No, thank you for that. Also wondering about being bilingual. Can you speak French, or do you think many of the MPs are bilingual? I'm curious about that.
Yes, I do. And I think it's good. I think it's important. I do speak French, but I'm not comfortable speaking French in the house because I don't, I mean, if I were to see, my problem, Marge, is that I don't stick to a speech. I don't stick to anything that's given to me. I like to improvise. I like to respond to what's happened. I like to, and so to think quickly enough to, because I don't think in French, to think quickly enough to translate and get the right words. And I think we all have a fear of, looking stupid. So, I speak French and I'm taking French lessons, as to try and improve it. But I'm not at the point yet where I feel comfortable speaking and especially answering questions in French. That's tricky. So, but I think it's very important. I think, Canada is a bilingual country, and I would say again to anybody thinking about federal politics, at least, please, study French. If you're a young person, study French in school. I studied it in call, in university and in graduate school as well, but it was a number of years before I went into politics. So I have to say it's a bit rusty.
Yeah, I can understand that. So thank you for being truthful about that. But and thank you again for nudging people to learn the language. I think there's so many people here in Canada who speak many languages, and I feel cheated for only being pushed to learn one. So definitely. What about the history of Canada? I really think things have come up, and whoa, my knowledge of actually history of Canada, history of the world really could be better.
Yeah, and I think it is. It's informative. They say if you don't know history, we're going to repeat it, right? You repeat history anyway, but it's good to know. And I do think understanding a little what's gone in the past is helpful. It's helpful to put things in perspective as well. I mean, I'm just right now reading, I read many books, but one I finished was actually on the Underground Railroad during Black History Month. And that really, really informed me a lot about the experience of Blacks in Canada, not necessarily Black Canadians, although that as well, but this was a lot about people who came to Canada before, the Declaration and when they returned, but the experience and their role in forming Canadian society. In fact, it was quite interesting. And right now, I'm reading a book called The Duel, which is the history of Pearson and Diefenbaker. And when they were both prime minister, when they were prime ministers alternating, obviously, in that era. And so to go back and read, and of course, one of the big areas, which I've done a lot of reading about, where there's a huge gap for me, because as with you, when we went to school, we didn't learn any Indigenous history. And from what reading, and I have to say, it's one of the things in Parliament and being a parliamentarian that I've really appreciated is the learning. The number of people, Indigenous people, I've been able to speak with and interact with and learn from, on so many fronts, and talk about women, right? And women in leadership. The way women are such leaders in many Indigenous communities, and until the Indian Act, really were the main leaders. And they're coming back. They're finding their power. And now we have amazing leaders of the Assembly of First Nations, of the Métis. Cassidy Caron is another one. There's so many women. So that is another huge area of history that I think it's really important for us to understand, not just in terms of understanding history, but also why the work we're doing for Indigenous reconciliation is so important and why it is the right thing to be doing right now. So yes. And women's history. It's another thing we don't read a lot about, Marsh. A lot of women who have done amazing things, they don't get, really, it's not highlighted. You walk down the halls of Parliament, every prime minister and speaker pretty much have been men. Right. Jean Sauvé was the only woman who was speaker, and she was appointed, not elected. So one of my secret desires is to establish a hall of women in the Parliament building somewhere. And I don't care if they were elected, but women did amazing things for our country. Yeah. And I don't care if they were the head, you know, person in catering. I don't care. Yeah. Like, I want a hall to show what women did that whole period where we were not allowed to be leaders or in Parliament. Yeah, you know, because we weren't invisible. We were invisible, but we were there.
Yeah, very good. Now, I certainly support that effort we need to stand a little prouder at times, and it's very difficult. And I do want to echo your comments about Indigenous women. I think we can look to what had happened before, you know, colonialism, and there's some very good ideas of how women very successfully, very compassionately nurturing did help
absolutely
our community. So let's hope.
Okay. Yeah, and I would say for the environment as well, Marge, right? Like, you're talking about collaborative government. When you look at the forms of government, and then you look at approach the environment, and, you know, worrying about seven generations. How brilliant is that, right? Water's life. I mean, I can think of so many things. It's just really, for me, incredible knowledge.
A lot of good ideas from studying Indigenous wisdom, I want to best say. Okay. Is being an elected official, particularly an MP, because, you know, you're not just in your backyard, demanding physically? Can you keep up with your exercise routine? Do you always eat healthy? Dealing with stress? Do you get enough sleep? And I've wondered, is there a pool and a gym in the Parliament buildings?
Well, let me start with the last one, because at least that's an affirmative. There is a gym. There's a members gym. There's a gym for teams, for staff as well. And I must admit, I do not use it. I'm somebody who likes to be outdoors. Mm-hmm. So if I get time to exercise, I'll be used to be running. And now I'm more fast walk, but I'll be outdoors more, biking, hiking, anything. And when I swim, I love to swim in lakes and oceans. So, but no, I don't find as much time as I used to, for sure. It's you really have to prioritize. And I admire some of the people who have been able to do that. There's a number of my fellow colleagues who have, you know, set a time and they go, and they're disciplined about it. You know, it's enough for me to try and stay healthy. I do, I have a Peloton. I'll hop on my Peloton from time to time. It's not that I'm not doing it, but I'm not as disciplined. And I think it's very important. I do try and eat well still. I'm a vegetarian. I've always eaten healthily. So I continue to do that. And I try and find time for some calm, some calm during the day, even if it's 15 minutes. But outdoor walks are really the thing that's, for me, combine a little bit of movement activity with calm, and just being able to, detach in a way and I find you need that to help you be more productive, become more productive, but also to really come up with solutions sometimes and answers.
Okay. Thank you. I worry about you guys, and hopefully you just weren't eating fish and chips and roast beef and potatoes for dinner. And that's all that was served there. So
no.
Okay. Good. Okay. I have heard that many people who have become elected officials at all levels, you know, they really didn't intend, it wasn't on their wish list to have such a position. They sort of fell into it. So, in your opinion, how should the decision to seek elected office be made? I'm thinking you need family support for one, but, you know, what do you think?
I think it can be made in so many different ways, Marge. You know, some people are intentional about it. They know it's what they want to do. I don't see it as a career. And this is where I think I differ. Some people see it as longer term. And I have to say, being in Parliament now, those members who have served for a long term, and we just celebrated a Bloc Québécois member who I think has been there for 41 years. So it didn't even start as Bloc Québécois because it was conservative back then. There were no Bloc Québécois. But I think it's good. It's, again, like I was talking about representation, having members who have served a longer time and have made this more or less, their career is a good balance. But I also like the idea of people having different backgrounds, different professions, doing different things, and then coming to serve for one, two terms as opposed to a longer term. And so I think there may be people who know early on that it's something they want to do. Others may decide to run and because there's a cause, because there's something there that they feel strongly about and they want to achieve or work on. I think it should be thought out by people. I think it is a has a lot of repercussions, not just for the individual in terms of their health and well-being, but for the family, for your family. I mean, I did wait until my youngest child was 18 before considering running. And I definitely did it because I felt strongly that our liberal democracy in Canada was at risk. It was after I saw, Donald Trump win the election in the United States. And as you know, I'd been living in the United States for a while and I was very concerned. And so it spurred me to do something that I had thought before about doing. But, you know, it's not something you have to think about from youth. You can just decide later. But do talk to somebody who's done it. Do look into all the aspects of it. Know what you're getting into. But look, as I say to all women, all people, like it is, we need good representation. So if you're really feeling it's something you should do or you could contribute to, please consider it because a lot of those things can be overcome.
Okay. Yeah, that's good advice. Let's hope we get up to that 50% sooner rather than later.
I hope so.
Okay. Now, being politically active, being civically engaged is not just I'm serving member of parliament. How else can people get involved in politics?
Absolutely. You know, and it's interesting when we say politics, because I don't even think of myself as a politician. I think of myself as an elected representative and somebody who cares about issues. And so I think about being involved in solving an issue or solving a challenge, in my mind, is to a certain extent a political statement. And it's a way that often people do decide to run for elected office because of engagement in a certain issue. So community groups that are working on different things like, equity, like the environment, ensuring that, there's homes for everybody, shelters, all of those things, they're issues that people care about and can lead to involvement or a decision to run for elected office later. There's also the party side of it. Many people don't identify with the party, so starting there is not necessarily a natural for some people, but I've always known, I was raised a liberal, I've always been a liberal, and I believe, it's not just because I was raised it, I believe in liberal values, I believe they're Canadian values. So, but people have to look at the different parties then and decide, do I feel that this is the best fit for me? Because there will never be a perfect fit, Marge. Some people look at me and say, why are you liberal? And I'm like, well, yeah, I'm a business person, but I'm also environmentalism. You have to look for the best fit. So, but if you do feel comfortable with a particular political party, then getting involved on that side, on the party side, is another way. You can get involved in policy. You can work for your local association. You can volunteer to work with a candidate, like I will be soon, or other candidates, whichever one, to see how it works. And I think for people thinking about running for office, it's in Canada at least necessary to think about what party. And once you've done that, I would suggest get involved in the party first. Be sure it's a good fit. And understand that side of being an elected official. It's a good way to do it. But Marge, you've done a lot in terms of the community yourself, and so many community organizations or at the municipal level or provincial. But, there are always opportunities to get involved on commissions or committees or working on a report or working on an issue. It's a good introductory way or through, becoming a trustee. A school board trustee as well. So it really depends on what clicks for you in terms of, I think, the issues and the policies. Okay. And then kind of, there's lots of entry points.
Okay. I think you've given some good advice. And I think the other thing that you've said sort of now, and I've heard you say it other times, is to talk to other politicians. Sit down, have a coffee, good conversation. I think that's something else that you can do.
Yeah.
Okay. I do believe that paying attention to issues and, the government decisions is really important. You can't just have your head in the sand. So can you elaborate on that?
Oh, I absolutely agree with you. And it's worrisome, Marge, because I think more and more people are less and less informed.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, especially with, and I don't, I'm not picking on younger generations. It's just the way that the way they get their information has evolved. Mm-hmm. And so because a lot of it's from social media, and I cringe when I see people getting, you know, their political views from TikTok or even Instagram. It's like, it has to be a little bit deeper than that, you know?
Yeah.
And so it's worrisome because ignorance is not bliss.
Yeah.
And I often say, you know, if you decide not to get involved, not to understand what's going on and to vote, then you're letting someone else decide your future for you.
Yeah.
And in my mind, we see that we saw that happen in Ontario with the election of Doug Ford, the Conservatives. I think there was such a low voter turnout. There was a lot of apathy. People didn't understand what they were voting for. Mm-hmm. They just looked at what they didn't want.
Yeah.
And when I see that, Marge, I say, you know, voting against something is like you're walking away from it and you don't know what you're walking into. You're walking backwards. And you've got to look at what you're walking into. What is it that you want? And is that what you're going to get by voting against something?
Yeah.
And so, but you have to be informed. And so it's a real dilemma for me because I do not fully know how to reach people anymore, Marge. It's, you know, people don't want to answer the phones. They don't want to answer their doors. Our local newspapers are disappearing. Social media is so shallow. It really suits, you know, slogans and very surfaced positions that aren't nuanced at all or aren't considering different things. People don't seem to have time, but yet they watch Netflix a lot.
Yeah.
They watch other things a lot, you know? Okay. So there's time. It's just, what are you spending it on?
Yeah. Well, I think we should listen to more podcasts. So
I agree. Podcasts okay. are great. And like YouTube videos maybe are okay, but something with a little bit more depth than a, you know, 30-second clip.
Definitely. And that's why I really do the podcast is not just political issues, but anything. If you just have a bit more time and listen to them. And I'm a big fan of doing that when I'm making dinner and cutting vegetables. I will listen to a podcast. So
absolutely. And brilliant. And thank you for doing that, Marge. Really, I thank you for doing the podcast because I think, you know, is it your role in the community, especially in Richmond Hill, all that you've done, you're connected to so many people and you understand how important just involvement and knowing what's going on is for our communities, right? For the vibrancy, the growth, everything.
Everything for everyone's well-being.
Yeah.
We do what one does well when we all do well. I believe that very, very, very much. So,
yeah.
Okay. We will find a time to talk again, but okay. I do end each podcast with the same question to everyone. Name just one thing you really like about this community.
One thing I really like, and it's funny, I really love the diversity. It this sounds like a political phrase, it's not, but also the inclusion.
Yeah.
It's so true. You know, we have both here, you know, I've learned so much just going to different events, but I always feel welcome.
Yeah.
You go to some place where it's not your familiar territory.
Yeah.
It's not maybe your community you grew up with, but every time I've gone someplace, before I ran and you know, as an elected representative now, people are just very welcoming. And I think there's a real commitment to making, you know, Richmond Hill and York region as a whole, a really welcoming, intentional, I think that's the word, intentional community where we care deeply about people and about how our community functions and grows. And to me, that's everything, right? I mean, other than, okay, family's the basis. I'd have to say that. But really, for communities, it's so important. So I do love that.
Okay, very well said. I like that answer. So, and I agree. We are very fortunate. We can do a little better. But if you put yourself out there, there's some great people doing great things. So
absolutely.
Again, Leah, thank you for taking the time to do this podcast. And I hope to see you around town soon.
Definitely will, Marge. Thank you for doing the podcast. It really is a service to the community.
Thank you for listening. I would very much appreciate you sharing this podcast. Please tune in next week as we continue to explore the community. Consider emailing me at marj@marjandre.com. I welcome suggestions for podcast guests. Stay well. Stay connected.